This episode of the Informed Pregnancy Podcast contains important but mature content that may not be suitable for young children. Listener discretion is advised.
Yo, I don't think we should talk about this.
Come on, why not?
Jeez, by night I can barely stand. I don't look that great, you know.
Yo, that's a part of our life.
Come on.
Let's talk about sex and babies. Let's talk about you and me. Let's talk about all the good things and the bad things that may be. Let's talk about sex. Let's not forget sex. Let's talk about sex. Let's talk about sex.
Welcome to the Informed Pregnancy and Parenting Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Elliot Berlin, and I'm joined by our co-hosts of the day, Kira Soltanovich. Kira is a hilariously entertaining comedian, writer, actor, and producer, and a two-time reproducer. Isn't that true?
I can't let that one just slide. You gotta run these by me first.
Sorry. Edit. Kira has a one-hour stand-up comedy special on Amazon called You Did This to Me, which was shot during her third trimester. She did season one of Winsanity, and she has a popular parenting podcast of her own called The Kira Soltanovich Show. Welcome back to the podcast.
Thank you, Dr. Berlin, and thank you for letting me interrupt your intro several times.
No, of course.
You know I can't.
That's why I brought
you
back.
Yeah.
Nicole Sessions, you've been on our podcast before as well. You're a wife, mother, birth worker, and artist, in addition to being a writer and actress. By the way, I notice you're an actress and not an actor.
Yeah.
Is that a conscious choice?
Absolutely.
You're an actress.
Yes.
But you also are certified as a birth doula, Reiki practitioner, yoga instructor, and hypnobirthing childbirth educator. You're currently finishing your first year as an herbalism apprentice. And you and your husband have an online business selling vaginal steam stools and herbal steaming blends.
That's correct.
Welcome back to the podcast.
Thank you. Nice
this
to be
chemistry
here.
Is all going to work great because today we are talking about sex. And our guest is Bianca White, a certified sex coach specializing in love, intimacy, and relationships. Welcome to the podcast.
Hello.
I have a question for you. What is a sex coach?
A sex coach. Well, that's a pretty loaded question.
What do people think a sex coach is?
Well, most, yeah, that's probably about
it. Are you there during sex?
I do like, not watch people have sex.
Oh, okay.
But I do recommend instructional videos sometimes about with people having sex.
Because it'd be great if she's like
extent
a,
of it, though.
Like a third base coach, you know, where they're giving like
is
signals.
Is that a pun right there? Third base coach?
Yes, like,
did you choose third base?
She's touching her shoulders and the brim of her hat and doing like this.
To the left.
Yeah.
It's similar. It's similar. Mm-hmm. I like it.
It's funny that Kira says, because immediately when I heard the term sex coach, I was thinking about all my coaches in my life, like my wrestling coach and my basketball coach. And they just, you know, they drive skills over and over and over again. And then, they're standing on the sidelines being like, inside roll, half Nelson.
No,
like,
for sure. You know. I mean, that's what most people call. And they say, you know, what is coaching? How is it different than therapy? Most of whatever I tell them, it has to do with the fact that, like, I have to dispel the myth of, like, you know, you're calling a sex coach, you're not calling a sex therapist. A sex therapist basically deals with, like, your issues with regards to the past, like, why you are the way you are today, versus a sex coach, which will say, well, what's your goal? Where do you want to get to? So, like, traditionally, like, a regular sports coach would be like, well, this is what you want to do. We want to win the game. So these are the things that we're going to do to win the game. These are the plays. And then I'm here to kind of coach you on. So that's kind of basically my role. I mean, I just kind of go, okay, if you want to have better intimacy, these are the things that we're going to do to try to achieve that. And then we just check in, you know, weekly, bimonthly, just
with
out.
An individual?
Or say
with
that
a,
again?
Are you working with an individual? Are you working with a couple?
Typically, I work individually, but I also do work with couples as well.
With either individual?
With either.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I'm saying you can work with, it's not just working with the woman or working with the man in a heterosexual relationship.
It's, I work with whoever calls, really. Whoever rings the phone.
Okay. So anybody.
Yeah.
But more often one person in a relationship and sometimes the couple.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I can totally relate to this because I remember I had a cross-country coach in high school who wanted to have sex with me. Oh. So it makes sense.
That's a different type
of different?
Sex coach.
Oh, okay. I'm so sorry. I'm going to need more information.
Coach with the sex.
That's more like coach sex.
Coach sex.
Which is totally different.
So sorry. English is my second language.
Cross-country, huh?
Yeah, I did cross-country.
That's endurance.
It is. So I have a question about a sex coach.
Yes.
You know, so let's say a couple is having trouble, right? Mm-hmm. Like, because they've lost the intimacy after, you know, the kids, and even vaginal steaming is not helping, which I don't even know what that is yet, but I just feel like maybe, you know, they got the stool and it's not. So what if they have two different ideas of what they want their sex life to be?
That's more often what I get. Is
okay.
Most people I think that I see are usually one person desires sex more than the other person. And so it's usually about bridging that gap, kind of coming to the middle ground of like, you know, listen, my husband wants sex all the time and I don't really want to have sex all the time. And that's generally more often than not, you know, like the general consensus of people in general is that men require mm-hmm. sex more and that women don't really want sex as much, especially if you bring in like pregnancy and children.
Right.
Taking care of the children kind of causes a little bit of like a deficit in terms of like time and energy and attention and stuff. So usually after pregnancy, if we're dealing with children, then a lot of times, you know, we have to suggest kind of, you know, amping up the intimacy. You know,
right. I think also like it's your time is limited.
Yeah.
But also just the time to like get to the waxing lady.
That's
a huge one for me.
Sure.
But like time, okay, the kids and the dinner and the
if
bath
only you
and all
could
that.
Multitask.
You're still waxing?
No, I mean, I have two kids and I'm married.
That's what I'm saying.
That's
like,
right.
That went
that's
out the door once I got married.
It almost seems
sorry.
Like if you could multitask and just have
marriage?
Sex with the waxing lady, why?
Right. Have sex with the waxing lady, you're
and
already
just
there.
Kill two birds with one strip.
See, that's
easier.
Why you're a doctor.
Yeah. Yeah, that's why they pay me the big bucks. How do you become a sex coach? What is the training like?
That's been a journey. Sex coaching is a certification, so it's technically not like years and years and years and years of studying at a traditional college. Most people don't offer sex coaching degrees, but there are programs that do. So you can become like a life coach, a nutritional coach, or a sex coach from a specific, you know, specified special school.
Okay. A school of sex coachery?
Yes.
Okay.
It's not technically called sex no. coachery, but
I assumed I might have made that up.
Yeah. It's just sex coaching.
Okay.
But it's
what's the program like?
So there's a 2-year kind of self-paced program that I took by this woman here in Los Angeles by the name of Dr. Patty Britton, who is basically like the foremost expert on sex coaching. Mm. And she has a program called Sex Coach University.
Mm.
Which kind
Great
of
name.
Yeah, to me it sounded honestly a little bit hokey when I checked it out, but the company is itself like a really highly reputable company. They're like the foremost sex coaching business in probably the entire world. And that's only because I did do a fair amount of research. And in my experience, just having been in the sex coaching industry now for the past few years, that like everybody knows Patty and they know that her coaching program is probably like the best.
How do you, I mean, at what point did you decide, I think I want, I mean, when people ask you as a kid, what do you want to do when you grow up?
No, this isn't my career of origin.
Right. Oh, you did something else first.
Yeah, I was a costume designer and stylist for like 20 years.
Oh.
But in that whole process, I kept saying, you know, like, this is not brain surgery. I'm not curing, you know, childhood cancer. This is just not like, hurry up and go get those shoes, like, you're going to make me feel good at night.
Oh, it wasn't fulfilling.
No, it just felt like, you know, I'm not helping people. And, you know, it made me feel like, you know, people come in and you see their vulnerabilities, you know, of them taking off their clothes and putting on other clothes.
Almost the same as your new career.
Exactly. Right. I mean, I'm still telling people to take off their clothes.
Right. And put on other clothes.
Right. But yeah, you get used to seeing people's insecurities, and it was kind of sad, I think, every day in and day out. And I try to help people, you know, be like, well, maybe if you just like, you know, work it a little bit, or like, you know, stand like this, and just like, you got to really feel it, you know, and try to coerce people into feeling better about what clothes they were putting on to kind of, you know, put a good foot out into the world.
But, so you're like a wardrobe therapist.
Yes, I was. I started as a wardrobe therapist. Thank
and
you.
And now you're a sex coach.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
When did you, I mean, that wasn't fulfilling. When did you stumble across?
I started actually fostering children. Mm. And my work schedule was like 20-hour days, and it just wasn't conducive to like starting a family. I knew I wanted to do this. It kind of happened sort of just by chance, but I got this opportunity to foster these kids, and I was like, all right, maybe I should just collect unemployment and figure out plan B. And I did. And I checked out this program. I just kind of just right out the gate just ran with it. And then over the course of probably 4 years in my studies, which should have taken me 2 years, right? But I was studying lots of different things in that whole realm. And then I came across another program that they offer through a institute in San Francisco called the Institute of the Advanced Study of Human Sexuality, which they offer a doctorate program.
Oh, wow.
And you can become, along the way.
Doctor of Human Sexuality?
Yeah. And then it's also called clinical sexology. Oh. So, yeah.
Sounds like something Prince would be right? part of. Sexology.
That's right.
Yeah. Clinical sexology.
And then also sex counselor. So that's like the different designations along the way.
Is that sort of like Old Name B, Gap, Banana Republic?
You say that again?
Nothing.
I have a question. I have a question for you. So when people meet you, do they just assume you're like really kinky and multi-orgasmic and like...
Are you talking to me?
You have the best sex. Yeah, I'll get back to you. I'll get back to you, Bianca.
That yarmulke.
It's a dead giveaway.
It gets ladies hot. Yeah,
we got you covered.
Sometimes you wear it a little angle. It's like, hey... Sorry, go ahead.
It's a multifaceted tool.
Well, I'm trying to think of like assumptions people make when you know, if you tell people you're a doula, they assume you're just like walking around wearing these like flowy skirts and like a flower crown.
Well, yeah, you did have a little placenta on your arm. Right. I didn't want to say anything. You had a little bit of placenta. I was like, uh-oh.
Kira ate it.
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, it was delicious.
I did.
Jerky.
I have
placenta
in the past.
Jerky.
Yes. All the time.
Yes. I'm a regular person.
Well, I think the assumption, yeah, is that if you are a sex coach, then you are kinky or, you know, are into BDSM or have like ropes and chains and, you know, all kinds of stuff in your house. And the reality of that is that I'm constantly dispelling that myth because that's, you know, that's huge. Because I think the more that people talk about sex and the more people are educated about exactly the different kinds of ways that people can be open about sex, there's less shame around sex. So right when you just mentioned the word sex, you know, people just all of a sudden assume like the worst, I think, which is like already very telling, you know. So I mean, I do have sex toys at home, but but they're not like really kinky ones, and I call the kind of sex that I have vanilla sex, which is usually the kind of sex that most people have. Normal sex.
I don't know what flavor my
sex is. And I shouldn't even say normal. As a sex therapist, I mean,
pistachio.
Sex
coach, yeah. I see you like a pistachio.
I think cinnamon.
Oh,
no, that's just saying.
Spicy.
Cinnamon.
Yeah. It's a little hot.
It sounds very spicy.
Wow.
Let's turn on the air.
Is there a cinnamon flavored ice cream?
It is getting hot in here.
There is cinnamon flavored ice cream.
Is there?
And cookie butter.
Cookie butter.
Speculoos.
That sounds
speculous. Cookie butter sex.
Speculum? How do you say it?
Speculoos, I think.
Speculum?
Speculum flavor? Oh my gosh, guys.
That's gross. Yeah,
it's delicious.
I don't know if we should continue this. Speculum flavored.
All right. These are the questions I get. This is when I met you and found out you were a sex coach, I thought, I get these questions fairly regularly from our clients, and maybe you have some ideas and suggestions. Fertility, pregnancy, and postpartum, each one sort of poses kind of a roadblock to, or a change to the relationship, to the physical relationship that then sometimes spills over into the relationship as a whole. Mm-hmm. In fertility, couples, especially the longer that they're trying to conceive and the more they go down that medical route, it's almost sort of like at 2 p.m. she'll be peeing on a stick and get a positive and she'll call him like, come on, get home right now. I'm peeking. We got to have sex, which becomes very mechanical and can really take away that part of the relationship and then strain the whole relationship. So what do those couples, how can they prevent slipping down that slippery slope?
Yeah, well, also coupled with, you know, clients that I've had that feel like once they've reached that point of like finally turning the corner and going into in vitro, you know, they're infertility issues become apparent, and then they're like, you know, we're just doing it, but like, you know, we have to do it, and it's just so beyond even just being clinical and mechanical that they feel like it's just it's not going to work. You know, they just feel like there's just
failure.
No hope. Yeah, they feel like failures. That's
So then sex becomes something very negative.
Absolutely.
Not even just like we have to, but it doesn't work for us. We're broken.
Yeah, that's why I think sex coaching is actually super beneficial, because when you come to see a sex coach, they can kind of put a new spin on it. You know, and really a lot of the times, most of what I end up doing is just pointing out things that I think that people have maybe forgotten, you know, like, I mean, going back to the whole idea of like having sex, you know, once you've already had kids and making that time again, you know, we had the time we had. I mean, that at one point our sex lives were great before children. Right. And then you get married and then you kind of forget, the husband has less attention. We have less time, energy, all that kind of stuff. We're just, you know, being pulled in so many different directions. So the same is true with fertility and, you know, and sex, that people end up having kind of these lapses in what was creating intimacy for them in the first place. You know, that there's an attraction, you know, this physical attraction when you want to have sex with somebody, that it's not, even if it's for procreation, right, you're still thinking like, oh my God, I really want to have sex with my mate, my lover. And when you couple this with all of those other negative things, then what you have to kind of be reminded of, I think, is what are you attracted to, you know? And those are the things that I kind of have to be incited again, you know? It's like, let's spark those kinds of things that we can make you excited about your lover about again, you know? So if it's like going on dates, or like, you know, helping out your lover do things that might have been super menial tasks around the house or whatever, just to kind of like release the burden, and then sparking other things that might be intimate again, you know? Like, I mean, some couples need instruction on actually how to be intimate. They might not have ever been intimate in the beginning, which is kind of confusing, I think, for some people, because you're like, how did you even get together and stay together then? You know, like, if you never had intimacy in the beginning. Mm-hmm. But I think some people don't realize, I think, that some people are so shut off maybe at the beginning of a relationship, that finally when they get into like the real nitty gritty of something, like a year later when you've finally gotten to know somebody really well, and you're like, okay, now I realize maybe there was just like just a blockade, a complete blockade in my brain about, like, you know, really getting to that point where I was vulnerable. I just did it, you know, and I just got through it. And, you know, I didn't want this person that I really liked to like leave me or whatever, you know. Or even if you've surpassed that and you've gotten to the point where you're in a relationship and you guys did have that intimacy, it's about, yeah, like recreating that again. So
going back to the basics.
Pretty much. I mean, you have to, yeah, and it just depends. Each couple's kind of like a couple-by-couple basis, you know. Mm-hmm. You have to figure out, like, what will re-incite it for them each, you know. I mean, for one couple, it might be, like, planning sex, not the scheduled sex that you schedule for fertility reasons, but scheduled pleasure sex. So it would be like, you know, let's say every Monday night at, you know, 9 o'clock after the kids have gone to bed, we light a candle, we burn some incense, we play our favorite music, and we both get dressed up in whatever we're supposed to get dressed up in, whatever the other person desires, and you create that moment of intimacy that'll be really sexy and romantic if that's what does it for you. Just to give an example, and then you plan on getting romantic, you know.
I like that.
Yeah, that's
all right. Well, that's okay. That's not how. I have plantar fasciitis in my left foot, and I have to sleep with a boot.
Oh no!
And my husband wants to have sex with me as I'm wearing a boot.
How's that work out?
Do you take it off?
I'm sleeping, we're in bed, and I have a boot on.
Take off the boot.
And I'm like, I'm wearing a boot.
I sleep with a mouth guard. I have to take out the mouth guard. You know, sometimes I'll find myself kissing him, and I'm like, ha.
Oops.
I'm going to take it out.
Yeah. And I've never, ever, ever, in 14 years together with my husband, ever denied, if he's ever asked for sex, I'm always like, you know, let's go.
Let's do it.
You know,
like,
suit up, yeah. Suit up.
It's good.
This was the first time ever that I've ever been like, I'm wearing a boot. And also, we still share a room with the baby.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's tough.
That's a side point.
That's totally bad.
We are going to take a quick commercial break. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. This episode is sponsored by an innovative product that's made a big difference for parents and babies alike. Dr. Mom Butt Balm. As a parent of four, I've had my fair share of battles with diaper rash, often resorting to thick, unpleasant pastes. I only recently discovered Dr. Mom Butt Balm, and I was immediately impressed by its pleasant consistency and ease of application. This pediatric approved skin protectant is free from dyes, preservatives, and zinc oxide, making it perfect for your baby's sensitive skin. It's designed by a doctor who's also a mom, ensuring your little one gets the gentlest care. A small dab is all it takes to soothe and protect, avoiding the mess and hassle of traditional treatments. With ingredients like dimethicone and petrolatum, Dr. Mom Butt Balm not only soothes, but also restores your baby's delicate skin. Available on Amazon.com and Walmart.com, it's the smart choice for every parent wanting to keep diaper rash at bay. Remember, with Dr. Mom Butt Balm, nothing comes between you and your baby. Not even diaper rash. Okay, let's talk about pregnancy for a minute and how that changes the relationship. Different stages of pregnancy, obviously some people get really nauseous and low energy, some women at the beginning of pregnancy. Generally, this is how it seems to go. First trimester, a little bit not feeling great. Second trimester, feeling kind of awesome. And third trimester, not feeling that good again. Is that what, was that your experience?
I can sign off on that. Yeah.
I made a big mistake. I was 10 days late with my first, and I tried everything that they say, go eat the salad, and go bounce on a ball. And then I made my husband have sex with me, and the look on this poor man's face.
Oh, no.
I was enormous. My baby, the first one was about 10 pounds.
Ooh.
So that look, I made a mistake. I feel like it was a mistake. I feel like from that moment, he hasn't looked at me the same way. And I regret making him have sex
with
me.
Did he not want to? He didn't want to.
He did not want to. Mm. And it was like making a child eat asparagus.
Oh.
He was just like, oh, God. Like he was angry about it. He was disgusted by it.
Oh.
I felt really just terrible. No.
Oh.
I still had to get induced.
What a waste.
You know, so I feel like if we're going to talk about pregnancy and sex, what can I do now, coach?
Right.
Put me in, coach. I feel good. Put me in.
What are you asking what you should do to induce labor?
No, I'm asking what I should do to erase that memory from his brains.
You haven't had sex with him since?
No, of course
okay.
we have.
Made another baby.
We have another baby.
They
so
had it at least
one
once.
Time.
Yeah.
Right. Before the boot.
Before the boot. I don't know. I feel like it's not the same.
So, okay, my biggest thing, I think that when I've been with my boyfriend for almost 2 years, we've been living together for quite some time in that relationship. And when we first got together, we did what all people do in relationships, right? You like
69.
Peacock.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, no.
Sorry, I apologize. I don't want to interrupt. Go ahead.
Yes, we do. But no. So we display our best self, right?
Yeah.
And we take care of ourselves really well. We get the waxes, you know, we put on our makeup and we like, you know, work out all the time and
shower daily.
And we shower daily, right, exactly. So you're really like at the top of your game when you're first dating somebody. And eventually, right, you're like, oh, he loves me. Look, and I've got this great ring. Blah, 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 you know, I'm going to get married and everything's going to be great and he's going to love me forever. And then things start to like dip a little bit, you know, and then we kind of like loosen that game a little bit. We become loose ourselves, like not like, you know, sexually loose, but we become loose. Like our skin gets a little bit not as tight because we're maybe not like putting as much effort maybe. And that kind of, I think all those things kind of evolve to maybe what ends up being super comfortable with each other, right? And when you couple that, I think, with kids, because my boyfriend and I don't have kids currently. We're actually in the process of doing in vitro right now. And I think that since I've been actually my own personal story about like preparing for this whole pregnancy thing is I've been going through hormonal changes and weight gain. And for me, I look in the mirror every so often and I go, I have to, especially as a sex coach, right? I have to really walk the walk. I have to be able to do what I'm recommending to my clients. And so I'm very conscious of like re-examining every so often kind of where I stand within my relationship. And that for me is super instrumental because I constantly have to kind of go, you know, what am I not doing anymore that I used to do before that was really exciting, you know? So I'm constantly communicating. I mean, that's my big thing with my boyfriend is that I'm like, if you don't tell me what you like or mm-hmm. what's not okay right now or what's gone away or anything like that, like you have to just be on the same page as me because I need to know what's going on.
Well, he communicated. I do not want to have sex with you. you are 42 weeks pregnant.
Oh, right.
Then.
We communicated then. That. Yeah, communicated, yeah.
But you don't really want to erase the memory, right? I mean, it's like you guys having...
Sounds like you kind of
do. No, I kind of
do.
Really? Yeah. I mean, obviously, I'm wearing a boot and he still wants... It's fine, but I'm just saying I feel like it's still there. Like, it's still...
Sure. Well, I mean, if it was about recreating intimacy and sexiness, which is what you had, I'm assuming, right, when you guys first got together?
I mean, I don't know. I'm an immigrant, so I don't really think...
These chin hairs
have sexiness, but go ahead.
Boot probably should be removed when you are planning to maybe have sex.
I was not planning.
Right.
I was wearing a boot.
So maybe if you plan on it, right? Like you might plan on it, and then that way you could just not have the boot on.
Well, yes. We're going for the first time ever in, 6 years. I have a gig. And I'm going to take him with me, no kids, for the first time.
Oh, wow.
Exciting.
Ever.
Wow.
Very cool.
Ever.
Congratulations.
We're going to go away for
That's
just,
exciting.
It's just 2 nights. So, I mean, I'm going to do everything. I'm going to pretend like I'm 19. It's going to be the biggest throwback Thursday ever. And I'm going to,
know what you can do?
What?
Leave the boot at home?
Yes, no boot.
For 2 days.
Actually,
yeah.
My plantar fasciitis is better. I'm not wearing it as much.
The steamer.
Congratulations.
Oh, yeah.
Good segue, Dr. Berlin.
Yeah. I was just thinking.
Well done.
What do I do? I will steam anything.
So let me tell you why steaming before sex is great.
Okay.
So the way that steaming works is that you sit over a steaming pot of herbs. It just increases lubrication and circulation. So that helps with arousal.
Are you saying right before or a couple days before?
No, like right before. So it's like, I don't know, 8:30, 9 o'clock, you had your dinner. Oh, honey, go do your little thing for a second. You steam for 10, 15 minutes.
But you go into the bathroom and you steam?
I steam in front of my TV. But you could steam anywhere.
Wait, what is it?
Wow.
So it's a wooden stool and it has a hole in the middle. So, you know, imagine what you're seeing right in front of you. And you put a mason jar with steaming water and herbs, and the steam comes up between your legs and it goes up inside your vagina.
So is it like the Korean spa? They
exactly.
Have, okay, yeah, I've seen those.
Have
home.
You done
it's
it?
It's the home Korean spa.
Wait, a Korean spa? What do you mean? I go to the Korean spa all the time.
Well, so they
not
have
all
it
of
at the Korean
it.
Spa.
They do?
Yeah.
You're missing out. Wrong Korean spa.
Where?
Yeah.
Which one?
Not all of them.
Like,
not all
which
of them.
One?
They have
tell
different
me right
menus.
Now.
Well, for sure, the Olympic spa does not have
lot.
It.
My favorite is Olympic, but they don't have it there.
Yeah,
that's where I go.
Where do they have it
then? I don't know. I don't go to the other ones.
Okay.
Maybe Natura. I don't know.
I've been to Natura.
But anyways, so it helps with lubrication.
Okay.
And it helps with circulation. So you have better, sex coach, please confirm that
circulation
helps with orgasm,
it's
right?
It's definitely
and
better for orgasm.
It shrinks the pores in your vagina, too.
It makes your vagina tighter.
Blackheads.
Yeah.
Oh my God!
Blackheads.
You really need to wax if you have blackheads on your.
Is that a thing? Vajacne.
You could do the charcoal mask for your labias. Okay, I'm all for it. I'll do. You know, I tell my husband all the time, if you want to have sex with me, here's what I need. I need you to tell me I can go to the Korean spa.
Right.
And I can go and sit and steam and sauna and scrub. And then I'll come home feeling so amazing. I'll do whatever you want.
Yeah.
Whatever. Oh. That's all I need in my life is to be naked with Koreans.
So you can
that's
do it.
All I need
you
in my
can
life.
Do it at home, but it also makes you very relaxed too. So if you are somebody who gets anxious before sex or like kind of in your head.
I feel like that was a very anti-Semitic statement. Just because I have just regular Jew anxiety. Don't try to mask it in some sort of vaginal steam sentence. All right? I know what you're trying to say. I'm on to you. But yes, I get it.
Okay.
It was, No, I feel amazing after I steam any part of my body.
Right.
It's, I feel like sex is better. Everything is better. The world is better.
Everyone
feel like,
just needs to steam. Like,
I feel
that's
like
the
steaming,
answer. All day,
no,
every
that
day.
Should be, like, legally you should
steam
have
life.
To steam. Because it opens up the largest organ of your body.
Yeah. You're talking about your skin, right?
Yes.
Okay, I'm just checking.
Just checking. Oh. Just checking, Yoko. Relax. This one over here, I'm telling you.
So now I'm glad you guys are both here. This
I know.
Is a revelation.
I'm very happy. I want to get some other pointers for my weekend away.
I have a question. So do people ever just call you, like, just technical? just like purely technical.
Like, am I doing this right?
Playbook?
Yeah, like how do I XYZ, or like, yeah, I really can't have an orgasm, or I want to have an orgasm like this, or
for
how
sure
do I give a great blowjob?
Yes. So
there's a 10-year-old in
it's
the room.
Not, it's not, yeah, it's not as weird, I think, of a question for people to ask those kinds of things, but usually those are not like the ones that I really can bank on for being like clients. Usually, right. I mean, I get a lot of calls. Anytime you have like sex in your title, oh, you know, people are calling and they're like, listen, this is what I really like to do. I like to take it out. And, I'm like, I'm not really sure that this is a good fit.
Congressman.
So there's a plenty of people who call in, you know, under the guise of saying, you know, like, hey, listen, yeah, am I doing this right? You know, or whatever. And I'm like, or how do I just want to have better? And I'm like, those are the calls usually that are not the ones that are asking for like help, mm-hmm, like real help, where they're actually asking for like, you know, creating better relationships and more right intimacy, or, yeah, you know, finding love or yeah whatever. So, yeah, there's not a lot of, you
but
know,
you
like,
are kind of like a love coach with a fancy title.
Yeah.
With like a cool title.
Yeah.
Because it's not just, it's not mechanical sex coach. It's like the whole package.
Yeah.
Love, intimacy, romance.
Yeah. But that's my style, though. That's kind of, you know, how I've cultivated sort of the term, I guess. What I found is that because sex is such a loaded word, that I had trouble kind of advertising on Facebook and on Instagram. Anytime you had sex anywhere involved, and advertising became an issue. And so I was like, how do I get creative with this? And I was like, my specialty anyways is all of these things, so maybe if I just like say, you know, I'm relationship, love, and intimacy sex coach, then, you know, the sex becomes a little less
sneak through Facebook,
less, yeah, less obvious, you know.
Yeah.
But I am a sex coach trained,
right?
For university.
Yeah.
That's right. That's real.
Sexology.
What's the mascot over there?
It's a vulva. The fighting vulvas. Yeah.
Very nice.
Amazing.
Oh.
Well, I hope that vulva's steamed because it's going to be better on the field.
We steam all our vulvas.
Good. Mm-hmm. Good.
So you talked about, you jumped to 42-week, get this baby out of me sex. But yeah, what about in between? Just during pregnancy in general?
Yeah. So, I mean, my biggest thing, I'm constantly reminding couples that sex, even though we all think of sex as being one of those things that's great, just spontaneous, you know, just like, take me now, this is it, let's do it, you know, that's so passionate, that's so wonderful. The reality of that is, I think when you've been in a long-term relationship, the most important thing is to schedule sex. And as unsexy as that sounds, it's actually like one of the best things ever. Because once you have a really busy schedule, we all have our modern lives, it's like really difficult to kind of bring in that practice of having sex, you know? Because yeah, if you take out the practice of like, if you take out like your yoga practice, you know, you just don't do it anymore. You know, you might go, oh, I can't wait to get to that yoga class. And you finally do yoga and you're like, oh my God, that felt so great. You're like, I should really do this every week. And in this, sex is the same thing. You know, it's the same with waxing. It's the same with getting our nails done or whatever. You know, if you don't do something that you normally do, you get out of practice and then you it's really hard to bring it back in. So,
but I feel like sometimes during pregnancy, women have issues with their bodies as they're growing. Sometimes men have issues with their bodies. They're not as attracted or more attracted, depending on what's
so
going
with,
on.
Yeah, with regards to having sex when you're pregnant, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
and men are always afraid they're going to hurt the baby.
Yeah.
Always,
yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
And Dr. Goldberg always says, you wish you could hurt the baby.
I mean, the biggest thing for me, too, I mean, I got into being a sex coach because I started as a feminist. I went to a high school here in Los Angeles, Westlake School for Girls, which is now Harvard Westlake. And we were a primarily feminist education. And so the story that I tell is that I really got into wondering what it meant to be a normal, healthy, sexually expressed female in society today. I was really wondering, like, what it meant to be female, you know, what all these symbols were, like, post kind of the feminist movement, bra burner generation of us trying to kind of be living in the society where we were like actually equal to men. You know, we could just wear jeans and t-shirts and just be just like men, right? So my exploration of all of that kind of came into, well, actually, it's okay if we just own our womanhood and our sexiness and our attractiveness and really just like stand firmly within that. So to bring it back to sex coaching and where I came to, part of my sex coaching belief is that I think that women really have to stand in their sexiness and really own their femininity. And part of that means really being more sexy. And I don't mean like in your day-to-day life all the time, which if you are, then that's great. But being able to be pregnant is kind of like the height of women's fertility, right? It exudes this like feminine, beautiful goddess body. And that to me is actually super attractive. So in Western civilization, I think we tend to think that we're getting bigger and fatter and more attractive, when really it's a kind of adopting a different perspective and just kind of seeing it as quite the opposite. You know, I mean, you can think very differently about whatever you want to think any time of the day if somebody poses like a new point of view. And that's kind of my role, is to be able to kind of reinvent that place for women and being able to feel better about, you
know, sort of change the paradigm around it.
And again, like coming from costuming, it was like I already had that experience, you know, of like helping people kind of have better self-esteems around, you know, what they were wearing or how they carried themselves.
Yeah.
Yes.
You don't have to go to a Korean spa. You get self-esteem.
Vag-esteem.
I think he just branded you right there.
Self-esteem.
You need to.
.com.
It'll be my Instagram tomorrow.
.me.
I'll credit you.
Thank you. what about, I have this, because you said schedule it. Is there, it sounds like you said a little too mechanical, but
it sounds like it, right? Yeah.
But I could see it working. Is there a frequency that's recommended?
Depends on the couple. So I'll just speak specifically about my life.
Sure.
I felt like it was important for me to have sex probably 3 times a week. And that's like an iffy 3, you know? So like, we don't have any kids right now at the house, so it's easy to schedule 3 times a week. But most of the time, you know, like if we've had like Mexican food or, you know, some kind of gas-inducing meal, there might be like stomach issues. And so we're not always, and we might be tired, we might be too stressed out, we might not be there that night, we might have plans. So we're flexible with those 3 nights. Flex sex, exactly.
flexpass.com.
My honey and I have the flex pass.
But what you're saying, it makes sense though. But if you schedule it and then, you know, opt out once in a while, it's better than not scheduling it and only opting in once in a while.
Yeah, and that again, that opens up the lines of communication. We go, okay, listen, we're going to have sex on Sunday nights, Wednesday nights, and then Friday and or Saturday, you know? So we can kind of at least know that those are the days that we kind of like avoid Mexican food, you know? Or we avoid
Don't
maybe
wear the boot.
And we don't wear the boot. Right.
Warm up the steamer.
But we will definitely be steaming.
Right.
Both of them? Yeah. Nice. No, I mean, maybe not him.
3 times a week.
I don't know. Is it for guys, too?
Gosh.
Is it
men can steam?
Men can steam.
A steam. Yeah.
A steam.
A steam.
You don't want a pee steam.
Yeah. Oh. What do you mean? Like their taint?
Yeah. And their perineum, yes.
Pee steam.
And their
They're
anus.
Steaming their taint?
That's wonderful. Yeah. I love that idea.
That's hilarious.
I mean, you
know,
couples
that steam together.
Kind of, yeah.
Well, for health and wellness.
Now,
I have
a question, and I'm all on board, so don't take this the wrong way. So you know how douching is not actually good for you?
Right.
To kind of like put anything foreign, and you know, it disturbs the flora. Sure. Does this have anything to do with that?
No, it's different.
No, different.
So it helps to rebalance the flora. If you imagine douching, you're actually inserting something into the vagina, and then that thing is spraying water. Or vinegar or whatever.
Oh my gosh.
Into the vagina, so that can upset the healthy flora balance.
Kombucha.
Right.
Kombucha.
Or kombucha, if Dr. Berlin just shook
the kombucha and then it was an accident.
So this is
Maybe
different.
You could steam with kombucha. Huh? Although, no, the heat element would kill all the good stuff.
The good biotics.
Yeah. The good biotics.
That's my term.
The pre or probiotics.
So, that's good to know. Yeah. So I figured I just was clearing that up.
Yeah, Nicole practices safe steaming.
Safe steaming.
Right? Isn't that true?
Yeah, totally.
So many Instagram accounts we created for you tonight.
Right, I know. I need like a paper and pen to just take notes.
Well, luckily, we're recording it.
Listen to it later.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I'll send you the link. How about this? How about after the baby comes? Right? So there's like a period of time. It's a big transition for so many reasons. Emotional, you're not sleeping as well, usually eating as well. The relationship often takes a hit. I sort of feel like any relationship between two people is like trying to climb up a down escalator.
Sure.
You know? And I think that having a baby speeds up the escalator.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, my biggest thing is for couples that have already had, I mean, that have just had children, a lot of times there's so much pressure, I think, on the female to think, I got to just get my body back and really be, like, sexy again. And then the pain, maybe if they've endured any pain during childbirth, which I know a few have.
What? Yeah. And tickles.
So, yeah, about having a lot of honor for being able to say this is kind of maybe like a no-go zone for a little while and just resting, because our bodies need to heal. I mean, they're such amazing mechanisms that can heal us, right, really fast. So if you're lucky enough to be able to have a fast healing post-pregnancy time, then you should be fine to be able to have sex. And, you know, I'm not even sure exactly how long it takes each person or whatever, but when you finally are okay, then you've given yourself enough time to be able to heal. Sure. And then you can have normal sex, you know, because I think that the problem
there's a 6-week, most midwives and doctors do a 6-week post-baby checkup.
Right. But if you've had like an episiotomy or like, you know, anything else, like there's like.
Just that seems like the earliest time.
The earliest time.
I would say that's early. I feel like in my, and I can only speak for my own vagina, but I have two babies, and the first baby I had a second degree tear, and I feel like I healed maybe normal to slow. But like even once I was healed, there was so much stuff to integrate. Like there's milk leaking out of my boobs, which are the size of my head or larger, which are smacking my husband in the face while we're trying to have sex and I'm not lubricated enough because I'm breastfeeding.
Man. You didn't steam.
It's crazy. I didn't steam. You're right, I didn't steam.
That's what it comes back
to. there's like, for me, I know that there was a lot to integrate. And then you have this whole idea of what you are as a mother versus who you were before a baby came out of you.
Absolutely.
You were just a woman. And so I had to make sense of what a mother who has sex is like, mm-hmm, as myself versus just my previous, you know,
so then
non-mom
it becomes
self.
Like a reinvention kind of, you know,
so
like
there was
a
lot
are.
Of work, from physical like, work, emotional work.
But how do you do that together?
Yeah.
You talk it through.
Yeah. I'm like, this is crazy. There's milk all over you right now, to my husband. I mean, like, I just had to say what was going on. And I think that really helped because.
But did that bother him?
The milk?
Yeah.
I don't think it bothered him.
I don't think so either.
Was it like a medical issue?
He's like, where's the lactate? She wants to have sex.
And how old are your kids?
6. No. Oh, my God. That would be your child. You have a 6-year-old.
Yes.
5 and 3. Mm.
5 and 3.
Yeah.
And the age is. See, you have 2 years.
They're so close together.
So close.
Yeah.
That's so hard to have baby. I don't
it's
know how
insane.
People.
Yeah.
I mean, I once checked into a hotel room that they hadn't cleaned yet. Uh-oh. And that must
Where
be.
Where are you going with this?
That must be what it's like. When it's not ready to be checked. It's not when the room's not ready yet. It was a late checkout. It's not ready. It's a mess. It's a mess in there. Yeah, because we have 4 years difference.
Yeah, I think that's kind of like maybe a more ideal spread.
Four? Yeah. Well, there's positive. Ours are all 2 years apart, but.
Well, you're in the clear now. Like, everyone could go into the kitchen and, like, make a peanut butter sandwich.
On their own?
Yeah, right?
Yeah, but now there's, like, kids running around all the time. Like, the older kids stay up late.
How late?
Like, 10 o'clock.
Oh, that's late.
Wait, how old are your kids?
7, 9, 11, and 13.
7, 9, 11, and 13.
June 1st, June 7th, June 10th, and April 30th, 2004, 6, 8,
Look,
and 10.
I'm not asking for socials. I don't know why all of a sudden you got just real.
Because I'm German. I'm
that's
just saying very well-engineered.
Like, most dads are like, April.
I know how much they weigh.
Oh.
We are going to take a quick commercial break. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
You know, I have a question for you. May I ask you?
Because I haven't
I haven't really spoken to you about your doula experience, what it's like for you as a man to be a doula.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, I have...
You're the first male doula I've ever heard of.
We're
am I crazy?
Very small group on Facebook.
There's
of course you have a
there's
group.
Steve.
I love that you have Steve.
No, we don't really have a group. I'm saying if we did, it would be a small group.
Okay. And you should start the group.
And we're all very diverse. Some of us were not born men. Some of us, you know, it's like there's not a lot of male doulas.
No.
And I know one male lactation consultant. And yeah, he's a pediatrician, though. It kind of makes a lot of sense.
Okay, that makes sense.
Makes a lot of sense.
But
so
what
for
is
me,
it like for you as a male doula?
It's the same progression. Like, I do a lot of body work during pregnancy. We do massage. We do chiropractic adjustments. We do a lot of labor preparation. And the body work that we do is both mechanically relaxing, tight muscles, releasing them, but also mind-body relaxing. So the first time I ever went to a birth was because I got called to a home birth by a midwife. This baby was just stuck for 7 hours at 7 centimeters.
Oh, my gosh.
And they were racking their brains trying to figure out. It was posterior, so the skull was against the back of the spine. All of her labor was in the back, and the baby just could not budge through there. And she called me, and I remember because I was in the pet store trying really hard not to buy a pet with my family. And she said, I know you can get breech babies to turn sometimes. Can you get a posterior baby? Can you get this baby to rotate its skull off of her spine onto her belly? And I said, I don't know, but I would love to get out of this pet store, so I'm going to come try. And I went there, and I didn't know either. They were filming a documentary, so this is all on film. And I went there and I worked with her for like 2 to 3 hours. And she was in that sort of, you know, excited state. It was like half pain, half pleasure.
This
state.
Was in her house.
In her house.
At 7 centimeters.
At 7 centimeters. And she's laboring for that long. Nobody said maybe you go to a hospital.
They were talking about it. But they were trying to think, like, what else can we do?
How do they know the baby's not in distress?
They monitor the baby at home regularly. And if the baby's showing even pink flag signs of distress, they go to the hospital right away.
How are they monitoring the baby? The same tool they use in a hospital?
Different tool, but they have a handheld tool that listens to the baby's heart rate, and they check in. Depends.
It just makes me very nervous when I hear that. But go ahead, please continue.
Yeah.
So you're there.
So I'm there. We do this body work, and it's my first time meeting her, and she's in this half semi-orgasmic state, right? And so I'm just like, hi. I'm trying to get informed consent. My name is Ellie Berlin. I'm a chiropractor. I'm going to do some body work and adjustments with you. Is that okay? And she's just like, hi, Dr. Berlin. I love you. And it's so nice to meet you. I'm like, okay, great. And every time I push into her, she's like, you know, again, like half pain, half pleasure. And then it was about two and a half hours of body work, just rich, really strong, tight back and pelvis, very athletic woman. And as we release things, you can feel her whole body opening up. And about 2.5 hours in, we just all sort of heard and felt the baby clunk the other way off her spine.
Oh.
And I think and she just said, you just, God bless you, you saved my birth. And from there, she progressed pretty quickly and she gave birth. So that story got out. And then I got called.
And you stayed for the birth. You stayed for
I left. No, I left. I went back to my family. Okay. My job was done. But I got called to another birth a couple weeks later for a very similar thing where what I did didn't end up helping. You know, the baby was stalled and she ended up needing to go to the hospital. She ended up getting an epidural, which helped her relax a lot. And then she also ended up having a vaginal birth. But those stories started to get out and I was getting called more and more at the last minute with babies or pregnancies that were stalled or stuck or too much pain. And it was working. And then eventually I got a call from this one girl and she said, hi, I'm 37 weeks pregnant. And my friend Becky said, you came and massaged her for like 3 hours while she was in labor. I want you to come massage me while I'm in labor. And I was like, well, Becky's baby was stuck. And she said, why do I have to wait for my baby to be stuck? And I really didn't have a good answer for that. I'm like, I don't have an answer for that. So let's try it. And I went. And it was kind of amazing to not have a problem.
Right.
And to do body work on someone who responds really well to body work. And just help her stay physically and mechanically relaxed and emotionally relaxed using body work and watch that birth just progress really smoothly. And I did stay to the end of that one because that's what she wanted. And then I ended up in a few situations where it got really weird because there was no doula. One in particular, I just got called to this birth center. Baby was stuck for a long time. They had been laboring for almost 30 hours and never met this woman before, never met her partner. The midwife called, she said, please, this is our last hope. Is maybe you can get things going again. And I got called in there and the midwife and her assistant were exhausted. They'd been up for so long. They didn't even introduce me. They're like, she's in there. Okay. And I go in there, and there's this woman on the bed. It's at a birthing center. She's on the bed, and her partner, husband, I don't know what, he's like, "Are you Berlin?"
Nice like, to meet
oh
you.
My gosh.
Yeah, he goes, "Oh, thank God, I got to go get some smokes." Okay. And he left, and I was there for
smokes?
Hours. He never came back.
No.
What are you
he was
talking
like, he
about?
Wasn't a husband. He was sort of like baby daddy. Didn't seem that comfortable being there, very exhausted. So I walk up to this woman. She's sort of in a child's pose on the bed. And again, got to give her informed consent. This is what I want to do, why I want to do it, make sure you're okay with it. But you ever talk and you feel like there's nobody listening?
Mm.
Like you're not sure if they... Okay, good. You're on the phone, but not sure if you got disconnected or not. That's
right.
What it felt like, but she was right there. And I don't want to start yet because I don't feel a connection and I don't have consent to do what I need to do.
Yeah.
And I wait for a minute or two, and it's awkward. Just me and her. Never met her before. Nobody else in there. All of a sudden, she picks up her head and she looks at me with like these very green eyes. And she says, and just threw up all over the place.
Come on.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
And I'd never been to this birth center before.
Is that consent?
I'm not sure
like,
exactly. So I called my lawyer right away. You know, I had to help her change, you know, I find sheets and change the bedding. It turned out to work really well. But as labor was kicking in more, she was sort of looking back at me like, help me, like coach me, guide me. And I'm like, oh, I just rub stuff and crack things. I don't know how to help you. And so at that time, I decided I should do doula training because I've been going to all these births.
Yeah.
And I need more. Sometimes they're going to need more for me. And my wife was also in the birth industry. She's a pre and postnatal psychologist. And we just decided to do it together.
Oh, she did it too.
She did it too. We became a couple of doulas. No pun intended.
Oh my gosh. That and, is kind of adorable.
They're adorable,
I know.
Right?
My kids know everything.
Doulas,
yeah.
A couple of doulas, and you know.
I'm going to play that song for her tonight.
Wow. That is really, you know, that's one of those things where it makes so much sense. When I heard you were doing it, I thought, yeah. That's yes, but also, and not that I have anything against a man being in the room. I have a male gynecologist. I prefer male gynecologists. Every female gynecologist I've ever had was very catty with me.
Oh.
I like male gynecologists because they are there to just do a job, and I've never felt any judgment. My first gynecologist in college, San Diego State, Dr. Kuntsman.
You're lying.
I am not lying to you.
And it was gynecologist.
Gynecology. I love
you.
Your puns.
Thank
Dr.
You.
Kuntsman.
It wasn't Dr. Kuntsman.
He pronounced it Kuntsman.
Of course
Thank
he did.
You.
Yeah. Of course he did.
But I prefer male. So I'm not, so this isn't judgy at all, but when I heard
I'm sort
you
of curious who you go to now.
I know. I was. You know, you probably know my gynecologist, Dr. Banuni, which also sounds like a vagina.
Yeah. It is in Persian. It's in Persian.
I just, when I heard you were doing it, it just made so much sense.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
It made, and I mean, I almost want to have another baby just so you could be my doula.
I would be there
I'm
for you.
I'm never going to have another baby.
Right.
But I love that you're there because... Wow, I mean, you bring so much. It's like a whole different side of what a doula is. My first doula, thumbs down to the ground.
Really? After the
induction? Terrible experience. Terrible experience. Second doula, different person. Great. She was great. But the first doula, I was shaking. I had a 22-hour labor. So hour 20.
With a 10-pound baby.
Yeah, I was just shaking. And she was like pinning me down. She's like, stop shaking.
What?
Oh,
yes.
Really?
I know. It's not terrible.
Okay. No, I don't remember that chapter.
I'm sure that's not part of your training. Mm. So that was just such a...
Oof. I always shake because I was in the South for a while. To be polite, I shake too. So they feel... You know, like if somebody spills, you're supposed to, I heard this when I was living in Georgia. If somebody spills at your table, you're supposed to spill too.
Spill also.
So they feel good.
It's like hysterical.
But then it's like
shaking.
A domino. Everybody's spilling.
Yeah.
So polite.
So we just shake.
So
we do song parodies while we're in labor. That's what I like to do.
What?
Like,
give me an example.
Like Weird Al style?
Well, just whatever's on her playlist. Let it go, let it go, don't hold on anymore.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Let it go, relax your pelvic floor. I don't care as long as I don't tear.
Yeah,
you did this to me. I'm not talking to your mother anymore. Anyway, stuff like that.
Oh, my God.
It's just fun, just whatever comes up.
Yes. Yes.
That's amazing.
No, you have to.
We have a good time. We have a good time. You'd be a great doula, too, because comedy is really helpful.
If I didn't have to work at night.
Yeah.
And not, I don't want to ever cancel a gig. I would totally be a doula. But my fear is, like, I would have to. You know, I'd have like some amazing set somewhere, and then I get a call. I'm going into labor. And it's like I'm going up on the Laugh Factory.
I gotta go, yeah.
You know what I mean?
I got a 7 minutes. Yeah.
I have to go tell dick jokes. So whoopsie daisies, have fun. But I would totally be a doula because I'm fascinated by that world now that I've gone through it 2 times, and I know that I could. You know, I don't know all the stuff that you would do, right?
But we're different.
Such an extra
layer. I find that so much of it has to do with helping someone not be afraid.
Right.
And so I can do it with body work, but you can do it with comedy. And,
yes.
And it's just when you're laughing, your body's like, I'm not being chased by a tiger.
Right. Yeah. My husband asked me to turn it off during the second pregnancy. So second pregnancy, no drugs, just you know, and moving around way more because the first one I was induced, so I eventually had to get an epidural. Mm-hmm. And then I told him to turn off the epidural. So eventually I felt everything anyway. So it was just such a different labor. But I feel happy.
And nobody strapped you down while you were shaking.
No.
Which is...
Oh, I could shake all I want. I could shake the baby out. Shake, right?
Do it.
So I'm trying to do your parodies. It's not working.
Well, thanks.
But I feel like I've had both. So I feel like I can be respectful to whatever. If you choose epidural, hey, I get it. But also, like, if you don't want to do any drugs, that's great too. But during my second labor, I was trying to make the nurses laugh, and my husband was like, please just turn it off. And I couldn't turn it off.
You couldn't. It's what comes out of you. And it probably makes you feel, like, safer.
I feel like you bring your own unique flavor to being a doula, and you know, you're bringing, like, I'm going to make you so relaxed and make your body feel great, and everyone brings their own sort of unique thing, so.
Yeah, yeah. The great your first doula might be amazing for someone else.
Right, for someone else.
Know, for someone
not
who likes
for
to be
for
tackled.
For someone who's not shaking.
Yeah,
exactly.
Exactly.
Or not shaking. Well, that was part of the conversation I didn't see coming. I would say this. First of all, Bianca, when you talked about changing the paradigm around the growth during pregnancy, that it's not just I'm big and I'm heavy, but I have curves and I'm radiant and I'm, you know, not everybody's
peak of fertility.
Not everybody's going to feel like that, no matter what happens.
No,
but
sure.
But I will just say we are organizing a flash mob of third trimester pregnant women. Oh. Hopefully by the time this airs, we'll have the video. And it's all, we have a choreographer doing this set, this dance choreography to Justin Timberlake's I'm Bringing Sexy Back.
Oh. That's so funny.
And the whole idea
is, invited,
of course, it's to raise.
I still look a little pregnant.
Come along.
I'm not
nurturing
passing, but.
You can totally come along. My wife actually, she insisted on getting pregnant again before I lost all the baby weight from the first baby. So I'm still, now after 4 babies, I'm still.
You guys are done, right?
I don't know. You gotta ask her. I just carry the luggage. I just do the playlist. All right. Is there a final thoughts? Anybody have final thoughts on sex during, before, or after pregnancy? Go.
Can't get pregnant.
Can't get pregnant?
Yeah.
Right.
Have sex
that's
when
true.
You're pregnant.
Yeah.
Oh, because you can't get pregnant.
Get pregnant.
Nothing to worry about.
It's great.
Oh. During.
Right. That's a
Got
great
it.
Tip.
Right?
Yeah.
So do it.
I love it. Yeah.
Thank
I
you, mean, Kira. That's a meaningful tip. I'm going to write that down.
Just the tip.
Just the tip. on Instagram, at just
there
the tip.
There you go. Add it to the long list.
And Nicole, final thoughts?
Yeah. I mean, I really like what you said about embracing the ripe, juicy, feminine, sensual person that you're becoming when you're pregnant.
I feel like you added juicy.
I love that
but
word.
But it's fine. It's a you kind of word.
I really
it's
love
a really
the word
good
juicy.
Word.
Yeah.
But don't we love just, about juicy?
Yeah.
I like juicy, but that's a little different.
Juicy, yeah. Juicy,
I want to open a juice truck. called Jews for Juices, but my rabbi didn't approve.
This. Yeah. I was telling you about
Jews for Juices.
The cheese shop that I wanted to do.
The cheese shop.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah,
that's great. Why don't you?
Or wait, what was
cheese
the other one?
Crackers.
Jesus crackers.
That'd be great. All the in the baby cheeses and you know section, or with the Swiss cheeses.
Goat cheeses.
Holy cheeses.
Yeah.
With the Swiss Jesus on a stick. That doesn't seem right.
I mean, I feel like he wants to be in on the business now.
I totally do.
I mean,
I feel like he's
juice and cheese truck.
I love cheesy puns, so yeah. This is perfect. You don't get more cheesy than these puns. Bianca, final thoughts. First of all, I did have one question that kept popping up in my mind. Just curious.
Tell me.
Do gay couples have the same love and relationship problems
Good
as straight couples?
Question.
Yeah, I mean, look, everybody's different, right? So, I mean, usually I think that gay couples usually want to be just like hetero couples. And the reality is that it's not the same dynamics a lot of times. So it's really hard for gay couples to want to be like hetero couples. I'm holding up.
Is that like vegans eating soy hot dogs?
Similar but different. Okay. But yeah, so I think it's a better idea to have a healthier idea of what it means. We have to kind of create this because there hasn't been a real traditional idea of what it means to be a gay couple in America now. You know, the idea is that they...
It's a new chapter.
It's a new chapter, yeah. So they have to write it and, you know...
Is that what you encourage?
Writing the new chapter for what it means to be a healthy gay couple in America?
Yeah.
Yeah, sure. Or in the world.
All right, what if two gay guys are wearing a boot? And all right, I'll ask you off air. It's too technical.
Well, they don't have that pregnancy problem.
No boots in bed.
They can have sex while anyone's pregnant.
Right, and they don't have to worry about getting pregnant ever. It's your dream.
I know.
I would like to thank everybody for joining us on this podcast today. Our co-hosts, Kira Sultanovich, and we can find you online at...
KiraComedy.com.
KiraComedy.com.
And I apologize for the tuberculosis.
Oh, yeah, it's okay. I don't think they can catch it. And Nicole Sessions, you have a couple of websites.
I do. So who are interested in yoni steaming or a steaming.
What is yoni? Where does that come from?
It's a Sanskrit word for vagina.
Oh,
vulva.
That's what I thought. Mm-hmm.
Dr. Yoni. I think he's at Cedars.
Did you have Dr. Yoni? Oh, no, you had Dr. You had a different doctor. But he pronounces it yoni.
Yoni.
Yunai. Dr. Yunai.
Kunzman and yoni.
Kunzman and yoni. It's a law practice. So Yoni Throne.
YoniThrone.me. And for my birth doula services and hypnobirthing, lovebloombirth.com.
Lovebloombirth.com. Yeah. And Bianca White, our guest today.
Thank you so
certified
much.
Certified sex coach. We can find you online at?
HollywoodLoveCoach.com.
HollywoodLoveCoach.com. And your practice is here in Los Angeles.
It is in Hollywood.
Can you work remotely with people over
absolutely.
Skype and things? Oh, beautiful. So you're worldwide.
I can be. I'm not right now, but I love.
But you can be
local
after this podcast for sure.
Absolutely.
Thanks everyone for listening to the Informed Pregnancy and Parenting podcast. Share us with your friends and visit us online for access to our blog, documentaries, and also soon the Flash Mob and other great pregnancy and parenting resources at informedpregnancy.com.
I got a whole lot of questions for you. This kid's gonna test my will. I got a lot to learn and my baby's due.
This episode is sponsored by an innovative product that's made a big difference for parents and babies alike. Dr. Mom Butt Balm. As a parent of four, I've had my fair share of battles with diaper rash, often resorting to thick, unpleasant pastes. I only recently discovered Dr. Mom Butt Balm, and I was immediately impressed by its pleasant consistency and ease of application. This pediatric-approved skin protectant is free from dyes, preservatives, and zinc oxide, making it perfect for your baby's sensitive skin. It's designed by a doctor who's also a mom, ensuring your little one gets the gentlest care. A small dab is all it takes to soothe and protect, avoiding the mess and hassle of traditional treatments. With ingredients like dimethicone and petrolatum, Dr. Mom Butt Balm not only soothes, but also restores your baby's delicate skin. Available on Amazon.com and Walmart.com, it's the smart choice for every parent wanting to keep diaper rash at bay. Remember, with Dr. Mom Butt Balm, nothing comes between you and your baby. Not even diaper rash.